We'll turn now to 18-8007, U.S. versus Martinez. You may proceed, yes.
May it please the court. Your Honor, I'm Neil Van Dalsum. I'm here for the defendant appellant, Christopher Martinez. At first glance to me, this is an unusual case in that there's really not any dispute about what happened. Looking over the record, that's just not where the fight is. The fight is about what was intended, what was going on inside Mr. Martinez's mind.
Well, on appeal, I think the fight is about what was presented to the district court in support of the positions you're taking on appeal. That's your big hurdle, it seems to me.
And that is true. But all of the fights, I think it bears mentioning, all of the fights about the evidence, about the expert that we're going into, are directed at those underlying disputes about what's going on in the defendant's mind. We're not out in left field arguing about something that doesn't matter. All of these arguments that are raised on appeal go to the core of Mr. Martinez's defense. And so that's why I wanted to point that out and start out there. In the district court, Mr. Martinez's assertion is that I was not trying to induce a minor to have sex. I was instead trying to investigate. I got off on this private investigation. And in that context of that being the dispute, at the very beginning of the case, counsel for Mr. Martinez went to the court and explained, Mr. Martinez has been diagnosed with severe mental illness since he was 16 years old. He's off on Social Security disability. He hasn't worked. And he's got a history of bipolar disorder and schizophrenia. And I have an expert that I need to retain to help me with this case. And the district court's response was, no, you can't do that.
Well, he didn't explain why he needed the expert. But he ought to explain, I'm thinking of an insanity defense, whatever. And so you're asking the district court to think of a defense for him. And that's not the role of the district court, is it?
Well, at that time, I would say, one, the application has to be evaluated based upon the information that's available to defense counsel. And so your suggestion that, well, you've got to tell the court, I'm going to do an insanity defense, I'm arguing about specific intent, I have to enunciate clearly at the very get-go, before I've retained the expert, exactly how this is going to work out, I think asks too much.
That would be asking more, but what you need to explain is why, what purpose could be served? Are you going to claim incompetence to stand trial? Are you going to raise insanity defense? The one issue you're suggesting now on appeal is inability to form the specific intent necessary for this offense, and which is pretty subtle, not real common. How is the judge supposed to know that at this time? Don't you have to do more than just say he has a mental health history? Give me an expert.
One, I would go back to, you cannot put a burden on defense counsel to know exactly how you're going to use the expert until you get the expert.
You don't even have to give possibilities.
And in this case, the actual assertion is that due to the issues in the case, I need an expert. And the standard is set forth in the case law is essentially, would a reasonable private attorney hire a doctor in these circumstances? I think any reasonable private attorney coming into a case where you've got a defendant who is accused of soliciting a minor and says, no, I was really off trying to do a private investigation. Oh, and by the way, I've been disabled and on Social Security disability my whole adult life and haven't worked, and I haven't been on my medication in 4 years. If I'm the defense counsel in that situation, I'm going to ask for an expert. If I were a private attorney, I would, and the funds were available, I would just go hire that expert. So it goes to what's the fight about in this case? In the initial discovery, in the initial complaint to initiate the case, everyone knows that what this is about is a guy who is accused of communicating in a manner that appears to be soliciting sex from a minor.
So let me ask.
Sure.
What mental health concerns were mentioned by counsel when requesting an expert?
As far as, do you mean conditions?
Yes.
The conditions that he outlined is that he has a history of depression, bipolar disorder, and schizophrenia, and he hasn't worked as an adult, and he's on Social Security disability because of mental disabilities, because of these issues. This is not a deal where you've got an attorney who says, as a criminal defense attorney, it's not uncommon that in your first meeting with your client, they're either on drugs or coming off drugs or they're just odd. That's normal. That's run of the mill. That's not time to go get an expert. But it's a whole different deal when you get a person who's never had a job and is on Social Security disability because of bipolar disorder and schizophrenia, and they're telling you, well, the defense that I have is that I didn't mean to do this.
Well, counsel, I think you've had a number of questions already about what level of showing is necessary. I mean, you're going to court, you're asking the court to fund the expert. Some kind of showing needs to be made, and I guess the question is what exactly it's supposed to be. And there's a statute that gives a standard here, and it says that the showing is that the services are necessary. And it seems that you're saying, well, the client has these problems, I need an expert. Don't you need to do more than that?
In many cases, the question is this person mentally ill at all? And so often the question is do I need an expert? Because
that's not. Let me just be clear on what kind of what I'm looking for. What is the necessity showing that needs to be made?
That it's potentially relevant. That I think one thing that you need to show is that you have some actual reason to think that a mental health problem is involved. You know, that's often the real big hurdle is, and that's often, as a defense attorney, that's often what you're really trying to figure out is, you know, I've got this kind of oddball client, but I think they understand what's going on. I don't think they're crazy. Do I need to get an expert at all? In this case, we're way past that. You've got a client who's already diagnosed with serious mental illness. And then the question is, how does that relate to this case? Well, your client's charged with a specific intent crime. I think when you come into the case as a defense attorney and you know that your client is mentally ill with serious mental illness, one of which is bipolar disorder, and that's been disclosed to the court, which causes people to go and not use discretion and not reflect and maybe get off on some tangent where they actually are doing some kind of crazy private investigation.
Well, but is that
you put those two together?
I understand what you just said, but is that what happened in district court? I mean, did counsel say, "Look, I'm requesting CJA funding because this is a specific intent crime, and the expert could perhaps, through evaluation of the client, assist in the defense of rebutting specific intent"? But was that presented to the court?
Not in those words. Due to the issues in the case, that's what's there in black and white. I think in this case, given that we're starting from the point of we know we've got a person who's mentally ill with serious mental illness, they're on Social Security disability because of it, they haven't been taking their medication, and the crime is attempt. And out of hand, the court, without a hearing, without a response from the government, you know, to the government's credit, the government didn't oppose that motion. It got denied the same day it was filed, with an order that just says, no, this isn't relevant. And then when we get to trial and to transition a little bit to some of the other issues at the same time, it becomes apparent at the trial that the district court does not think that mental health evidence is relevant to any issue in the case.
Well, in part, that's because counsel didn't make any argument. Counsel never argued that the mental health evidence was to be proffered to negate the specific intent required here.
If I could go back in a time machine and sit next to counsel, I would have had him use some magic words like that.
Well, what? I wouldn't call magic words when all you need to do is try to explain to the judge what you're trying to get at. And not even during trial was it at all clear that counsel was interested in negating specific intent. That's not an obvious defense, and I'm not faulting counsel for not thinking of that subtlety. But you can't expect the judge then to say, oh, I know what you might be trying to say or what you should be trying to say, so I'll let it in and then inform counsel of this, what I continue to say, subtle defense. You're asking way too much of the trial judge.
I would say, one, it's an element of the offense. You know, it goes to an element of the offense per the jury instructions. The jury was instructed, you have to find that this guy actually was intending to break the law. That's a little bit of a paraphrase, but it's pretty close to what's in the instructions.
Yeah.
And she's been told this person's mentally ill, and he would like to testify to explain his conduct. That was said by counsel, is that this is for purposes of explaining his conduct in the case, explaining what he did. And you know that his testimony clearly was, I was trying to catch these people, you know, and to the extent that there's this record of all these emails, it's because I was trying to effectively build a case against this person that I thought was doing something.
I'm looking at what defense counsel said. Never said anything. What I'm trying to introduce simply is that we have an individual that has mental issues and a mental diagnosis, and he's been on SSI and is part of his background. I mean, I understand, I think the court can limit, okay, well, talking about that issue and how it affects his mental well-being or how it affected his mental well-being on that day, goes on. Later he says, I want to introduce the records. The only reason I want to introduce the records is to show that when he says, yeah, I've been on SSI, that's documented, and the jury doesn't think that he is faking it or just some person out there. So it sounds like, that doesn't sound like an argument in support of mental health evidence to show lack of intent. That's he wants to make it look like this guy isn't a malingerer and isn't just cheating on SSI. He's got a real reason to be on Social Security disability. That's a very different point.
That came up in the context of the district court saying, well, I'll let you put on just enough to explain what he's been doing with himself. But elsewhere in the record, the attorney says this is to explain his behavior. That's also in the transcript.
Well, and then also it's in the transcript, and this goes to the non-expert but mental health evidence, his testimony in the records. Counsel said at the close of the government's case, mental health evidence is not really offered as evidence. We're again trying to introduce to negate a specific intent element of the case. So they're even kind of backing away from trying to negate specific intent.
I just had a quote here, same effect. Counsel said, I wasn't planning on bringing in an expert to come in and testify that he suffers from depression, ADD, and bipolar, and therefore that's why he committed this act.
And there you have to understand that the judge is asserting that, well, under the Insanity Defense Reform Act, you can't just say, oh, he did this because he's got bipolar disorder and sometimes he misbehaves. Here the argument is not that he was misbehaving. His own testimony establishes that what he's asserting is that I was not intending to commit this offense at all. I was off on a private investigation, essentially. And so those statements are made in response to assertions that, well, you're just trying to explain the misbehavior of a low-functioning person.
Do you think counsel made a clear statement to the district court that he was offering mental health evidence to show that defendant didn't have, could not have formed the requisite intent?
I will concede he didn't use that terminology. He did assert that I was trying to get this in to explain the behavior of the defendant. And in the context of his subsequent testimony and trying to get medical stuff in or mental health records in, once that testimony's on, I think it's all pretty clearly relevant.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. May I please the court? Counsel? My name is TJ Forwood. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney with the District of Wyoming, and I'm arguing on behalf of the United States today.
The one issue I see for you is, isn't it enough to say my client has schizophrenia? Shouldn't that almost automatically lead the court to appoint an expert for evaluation?
It's a very, very fair question, Your Honor. And when someone alleges these allegations, I completely agree, and that is one that raises depression, maybe not, but schizophrenia.
Yeah,
yes, that would raise your antenna.
But, maybe, yeah, go ahead.
But the issue, though, is, as the court said before, does this relate to the request for what he was asking? And the request that was originally filed in September asking for the help of a forensic psychologist was insufficient because it did not state why he needed that.
Well, what he, yeah, I realize that, but is it enough without explanation? Does it go without saying that when the defendant has schizophrenia, there ought to be a forensic evaluation for multiple possible reasons?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Why not?
The reason being is, and what was put in that motion as well, is he was diagnosed with these when he was 18 years old. The time that the offense was committed, he was 27 years old. So some time had passed in between. There was no mention
is
of what happened.
Is there any reason to think?
Pardon?
I thought once you're diagnosed with schizophrenia, that's a permanent diagnosis. Am I wrong about that?
Your Honor, I have no idea because I only took one psychology class in college.
Okay.
And that's one thing that can easily stay there, but there's no document saying what these are, what they did, or what he intends to show. What he stated he intended to show in that motion was that he wanted a forensic, someone to do a forensic evaluation of him and a polygraph. The language he used is what Judge Friedenthal reflected in her order, stating that this is something we typically see for sentencing mitigation in child pornography cases. And her order as well even stated there that there was no purpose stated for it. I can pull up that exact language. Apologize for the delay there. In this motion, the defendant failed to provide the court with information regarding the necessity for a forensic evaluation by Dr. Dennison at government expense. And further, the final paragraph, in which she denies it, she states that it is denied at this time. This motion was filed on September 28th. Trial did not occur for more than a month later. The defendant had adequate time. If his true purpose was to attempt to negate the specific intent element, he could have filed a subsequent motion for these expert services. He had ample opportunity to do it and never did. And what's seen as well, too, Your Honor, is, and something was just spoken of a second ago, is during the trial itself, defense counsel wanted to elicit this testimony to justify the actions, but also do it for the knowingly element. Even when that was brought to attention, he had a chance to say, we are using this to negate specific intent. He stated that it was to negate the knowingly element, to try to justify why the defendant was engaging in this conduct. He says, well, Your Honor, it goes towards the elements of this case. As I indicated before, a person has to knowingly induce.
The knowing issue is not raised on appeal, is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor, because that is That is what the IDRA, I believe, is intended to prevent. And it's what was stated before is that the enactment of that under 18 United States Code 3006A is to prevent the use of these, except for, of course, when you're inserting an insanity defense or in those limited situations when you are attempting to negate that specific mens rea for specific intent. And nothing throughout any of the motions that he was filed or any of the arguments that were made to the court was that ever mentioned. In the United States motion in limine prior to trial, we did not discover until, I believe it's mentioned in the motion in limine, just prior to trial, a potential exhibit were these prior records. There was no foundation for them. There was no purpose what was stated for them. And that is why the United States filed the motion in limine. And what the United States stressed in that original motion as well, Your Honor, is that it has to be, these have to be used for a proper purpose, which would be to negate that specific intent. It needs to have the proper foundation. An expert cannot testify and say specifically if that person had the specific intent or not, but that individual testifying to it would provide the information on what that condition is and what it might be at that time. None of the potential evidence that he attempted to offer was relevant to what happened at that time, and that's where it's something that was brought up in the reply is, and something Judge Hartz noted a minute ago, is schizophrenia. That's something I believe stays with someone for their entire life.
Counsel, it seems like we're going back and forth across a couple of issues here. One was the motion to have an expert appointed under the CJA, but we also have the non-expert mental health evidence, his testimony, the records, and so forth. And I may have misunderstood, but I think you might have been talking about the latter a bit too there.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. Yeah, and that's so, all right. And these blend together.
And so what I wanted to ask you about that is just how exactly the district court handled that evidence as an evidentiary matter, because it seems as if you're arguing, at least, this wasn't relevant in the first place. But it also seemed like the district court kept it out, not because it was irrelevant in a probabilistic sense, Rule 401, more under a 403 analysis where it would be confusing. And the court used the word confusing. And so just for purposes of aiding our review of that issue, what is the proper analysis of the mental health evidence? Is it did the district court exclude it as irrelevant, as a logical Rule 401 matter, or did it exclude it as a balancing matter that maybe it could be a bit relevant, but I'm not letting it in because its probative value is outweighed by the potential for confusion?
I believe that the court in the final issue, even though Judge Friedenthal did not state which rule it was under, I believe that, as you stated, the confusing language might be which she was going towards. And that is what we see in a lot of the decisions in which mental health information is excluded, is because it can confuse the jury. Because that's the concern, is that bringing in evidence of this mental health might only confuse the issue more. It does not actually go towards the intent. It's every single decision there, Your Honor. Is the point is to get across what are the facts, what are the circumstances that are relevant. And if something can be confusing and does not actually negate their specific intent, which is what I think Judge Friedenthal might have been saying with that.
Well, I guess the reason I'm pushing, I know this maybe isn't the most central question, but it's one we have to work through. For evidence to be relevant, is just flat out logically relevant, it's a very low bar. And to the extent that this person has had some mental issues, and to the extent that the statute or the charge here requires proof of specific intent, I'm having a hard time seeing where the mental health evidence is not at least gets past that initial requirement, that is the initial relevance.
So under 401, it at least gets there, so the question then, does it pass 403?
Yes. Is that the right way to be thinking about this?
To be frank, Your Honor, I've not thought about that issue, and I think it's actually very soon. It makes a lot of sense to me. The argument I made at trial was that it was not relevant at all because the insanity defense had not been asserted. But as you stated, is that there is a possibility that it could have been raised, depending on what other issues.
Well, the insanity defense wasn't raised, but the charge in the case placed his subjective intent in issue.
It does.
I mean, again, I don't want to belabor the point. I taught evidence in a former life, and maybe it's coming out. But I was just curious about what the district court did with it.
And my belief, Your Honor, from reviewing the record as well as being there, is I think it's probably under 403 in which Judge Brienthal denied that evidence, being that it would be more confusing than anything else to the jury and would confuse the issues. So picking up from there, with that second issue, that the denial of the mental health evidence, as stated before, there was not a proper foundation to bring that evidence to trial in the first place. There was not a basis to say what conditions he was suffering from at the time this occurred, if it was being treated or not. Unfortunately, the record, we don't have any of those past medical records in the record to even review. What can be seen from some of the motions is that the most recent one, which was 5 years prior, was a discharge record.
There was no proffer of that mental health evidence?
Pardon?
There was no proffer of the mental health evidence?
There was Mr. Custis made a proffer of it during a motions hearing prior. Nothing was ever formally submitted to the court.
What do you mean by proffer then?
Pardon?
What do you mean by a proffer?
Oh, sorry. He proffered the evidence. When the United States...
I mean, you say, but nothing was formally submitted to the court. How did he make a proffer? He said, I have mental health evidence? Or did he describe it in any detail?
Prior to the trial, the court requested that we submit any proposed exhibits. One of defense counsel's four of his proposed exhibits related to the defendant's past mental health. One of the documents was an initial diagnosis that was 9 years old, and the other was a discharge from 5 years prior. Those exhibits were denied. As I went through the record, I could not find those anywhere in there. I might have missed it. I tried to find those records specifically because I think that would aid the court here. And those records were discussed when the admittance of those or the relevancy of those were put at issue, and we discussed those records.
So what you're saying is the records were proffered, but we don't have them.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And the reason being is there was never a motion done, and that's where it comes to, I think, from the Cameron decision, where defense counsel must demonstrate a link of the evidence and the specific mens rea before trial. That never occurred. The closest thing that happened was 4 days before trial where the proposed exhibits were submitted, and all that was there were these four records with no background, no foundation for them to say how they were going to be relevant or what they were to be used for during the trial. And what Mr. Custis said during trial is that they would be used to explain his actions for the knowingly element, which we discussed at length here, is that that was not the proper purpose. Specific intent would be. But we need to show how it would negate it, which we did not have there either, Your Honor.
Why wasn't the... character evidence. I guess they wanted to call his spouse. Is that as a character witness?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Yeah. Why wasn't that evidence improperly excluded? It seemed like the cross-examination was done to point out inconsistencies, brought out the fact he lied to his wife about where he had gone. Why didn't that open the door under 608A?
Because during the cross-examination, it was never an attack on his reputation of truthfulness. The part about lying to his wife, I believe that came out during the direct examination as well, too. It definitely came out in the cross-examination, but I believe that it came out in the direct examination as well. And that's the thing in which we're not attacking his character for truthfulness there. He admitted that he lied about that specific instance. He lied to his wife. He admits to it. We were not attacking his reputation for truthfulness.
Well, but isn't that an attack on his credibility?
An attack of credibility is separate from an attack on somebody's truthfulness.
How is it different?
The attack of credibility is, what is the bias of someone saying? Why are they trying to justify these actions this way or that way? The attack on truthfulness is the reputation. Is this an honest person? And that is not what the United States was doing. When a cross-examination is so specific and is pointing out this and that in a very contradictory manner, then that can give rise to the reputation of truthfulness. However, that is not what was done throughout the cross-examination. A point that Judge Freenthal stated even was that he said yes to many of the answers. And though that might seem like an odd thing, and I thought about it for a while afterwards, is that if the United States was attacking the truthfulness, the defendant would have been saying, no, that's not the case, no, that's not the case. But we were not attacking his truthful character. We were merely showing that the story he was giving was not credible. With that, are there any further questions? Thank you.
Ellen, have any time left? You had a few. Yeah. Go ahead. Looks like you had some time left.
Your Honor, I'll just make a few quick points. One is, the evidence of his mental health condition was relevant. And as you point out, it was, in my opinion, extremely relevant, given that his entire defense was to try to explain his behavior as being an investigation as opposed to the intent to commit a crime. And the court ruled very clearly, repeatedly, this mental health evidence is not relevant to any element of this offense. And that was a legal error. That was a legal error that was encouraged by the arguments made by the government when it came time for trial. So the evidence of mental health, which could have included his own story, just him telling the jury, this is my situation, was not allowed to happen. He was not even allowed to ask, the defense counsel was not even allowed to ask questions. When they got close to asking questions, it was move on. We've talked about that. Don't go there. And so that's what happened in trial that eliminated any real discussion in front of the jury of what was, in fact, relevant evidence in the case. If the concern is Rule 403, the way to address that, if the judge had a concern, would be to give a limiting instruction to the jury. So that could have come in.
That's going up. That shows you're a minute and a half.
Oh, okay. Do I need to be done?
If you don't mind.
Okay. I'm done. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Case is submitted. And